lineouts, racks.
Pulls, engage!
What an amazing try!
Tries and tackles, dissected by South Africa's top rugby minds. This is To The Last Drop, your weekly in-depth rugby podcast with Liam Delcombe and Brendan Nell.
Welcome back. Taking a long, very interesting weekend in Nelspruit, Mbombela for us all. Springboks are champions. The world is fine. The sun is shining, although it's very cold in Gauteng nowadays. And everything's good with the world.
Yes, it is. We had to wait a little bit for the celebratory fires to be lit and for the champagne corks to pop after that defeat in Argentina. But I think the wait was almost worth it, given the Springbok performance, the way they vacated the starters blocks on Saturday, played with a lot of intensity, almost caught Argentina a little bit cold. Not that they didn't know it was coming. I think they knew it was coming. But there was very little they could do about it, especially in that first half. A compelling performance in that first half. Bit of a drop-off early in the second. But overall, what, 48-7, a performance of a real authority.
Yes, he's dominant, very dominant. If you look at it, 7 tries to 1, it tells a story in its own. But the strangest thing is the way they play, you'd almost say that they left another 5 or 6 tries out on the table. They had one disallow, and they certainly could have easily scored another 5 or 6 if a pass or two went to hand or something happened. And it wasn't like the 57-0 that the Boks took against the All Blacks a couple of years ago. Argentina continued playing. They tried. Mm. They were on the Boks try line a number of times. The Boks just didn't let them through. Now, it was just, to me, that was a determined performance. Somebody we both bumped into I think you had left by that stage on Friday night in the legendary place called the Jock, told me that they had spoken to one of the Springbok front rowers, and they basically said, well, yeah, the kids didn't do it last week. This week, the old men have to come and put things right. And not quite what it was, but it was certainly some of those double World Cup winners reminded us in no uncertain terms, yeah, that they still have what it takes.
Yeah, Rassie Erasmus spoke of, in making the selections for this game, that he expected the players who were rested the previous week to come in, show composure, show their experience, bring a bit more grunt perhaps as well. And that was certainly the case. They played like champions for large parts of that game and kept an Argentinian team. I mean, and it's a decent team under Felipe Contepomi. Kept them not just at bay, but I mean, they were well beaten in the end. I mean, there was a stage where Argentina, when they scored their try, if they got another one quickly, they would have been back in the game. But that challenge was beaten down. And I think very much, I mean, if you look at the experience that was in that Springbok team, it's basically those warriors who had seen it and done it all before that decided, okay, this is the moment we need to show it again.
Yeah, and it started the previous week. Their lineouts weren't great in Santiago del Estero, but this week was good. Their scrum, as always, was monster, which reminded me of, we spoke to a colleague, somebody who works at SA Rugby, who'd spoken to Don Himon straight after the game, and he still asked Don, how many scrum penalties did you win tonight? You know, so there's a joke. And Don just looked at him deadpan in his bucket hat and said, all of them. So that sort of summed up the scrum performance. Not much more to say about that. But there's a couple of players that are coming through as well. I mean, everybody saw up there Fassi the last 2 weeks, the way he's gone and the way he's gone this entire season. And we'll be hearing from him a bit later in this podcast as well. Just his improvement and how he's improved on defense. And then other players, I'm going to mention a couple. Elrich Lowe, to me, has almost matured. The last time he played for the Boks, he was a bit loose at times, and his form dipped straight after that. Struggled to get back, but now he's back. He's almost become sort of the second bruiser ball carrier that the Boks need, and he comes on at a very good time, makes meters every single time he gets the ball, and that was very impressive. Karel Steenkamp has become almost like the silent assassin to come off the bench. You wouldn't say the Boks missed Steven Kitsoff at the moment, because certainly doesn't look like it in terms of the scrum penalties that they keep on winning. Obviously, there was Sasha, who now we also, there's another talking point we'll get to, is that now looks like he's out for 10 weeks. That looks like a much longer injury than initially thought by the Boks. And then if you look at the others, I mean, I think, help me out here quickly.
There's Manny Lebok as well, I suppose, but he's not a new player. He's been part of the furniture.
No, true. He wasn't. There was one other one that I wanted to mention, but I'll get to it now. But let's talk about Sasha and Matt, and we'll come to you.
Yeah, I don't think it's an entire crane smash. Obviously, it sets him back a little bit. He's going to miss out on the end of year tour. It's a big setback, I think, for the Stormers, because at some point they probably would have wanted him back, get him back into the 10 jersey or the 12 jersey or wherever they see his future. But I mean, we know he's such a talent that he's going to just slot straight back in when it comes to the box. I think he's the body of work this year. I think he played, what's it, 7 tests in a row before he got a rest. He's done enough there to convince people that he's more than up to it at international level. So he'll come back next year and there's no issues there. Obviously, it provides more opportunity now for Andre Pollard and Marnie Lebok to sort of add to their test numbers. Unless, of course, Rassie Rasmus decides to just bring another surprise on us on that end of year tour. You never know, because the box are reasonably well stocked in most areas.
I was going to say, I mean, the player I was forgetting, by the way, it's come to me as you spoke about, is Ron Nokia. He started the rugby championship outside the sport and then ended up playing 5 tests in a row for the Springboks. And, really also a guy who came through and has really proved himself. Still feel he needs a bit more bulk if he's going to have a long-term future as an international 5. He is a bit strict.
That for me is a yes and a no, because he does offer you, he's a very good lineout exponent. There's no doubt about that. But he also kind of gives you the Franco Mostert dynamic of getting around the park, spreading his influence, getting involved in battles. A bit more bulk would add to, if the box need to play tighter, there's no doubt that would aid them. However, I think his strength really is in influencing things around the park and getting around, and mobility, I think, is his friend.
Well, I think nowadays, and I mean, I'm no expert on this, and there are people much more qualified than both of us that probably do these things when they go into the gym. And there are ways of putting on a bit more bulk without losing speed. There's a whole sort of process that the guys go through. I think part of the problem that he's had is because we've been playing since COVID, 12-month seasons, he's never really had an off season where he could go just spend it in the gym or just spend it, concentrating on that. There's been so much workload on him, and he does get around the park. He's always one of the top guys. When you look at carries, tackles, he's everywhere on the field as well. So, he's really impressed me the way he's come through, and hopefully it continues, because the more depth we have, the better it is for 2027.
I just wanted to make a point again about, you mentioned Elric Lowe earlier. The thing that struck me is that his energy seems to be more channeled now. It looks like he goes in with a proper idea of what he needs to do. In the past, I mean, it was a bit scattered, but here and there and everywhere. Increasingly, you get the impression that, all that energy channels in the right direction.
Yeah, no. Look, I mean, there's a lot of these guys. If you think they've used 49 players in this test season, as Rossi said, 35 of them in the rugby championship. If you look at that number, it tells a story of how much depth there is, because we could all name 10 players that are probably outside the 49 that we probably think could be in and probably still will make an appearance at some point. But if you look at to select the team for the end of the year tour, now you're going to say, well, you can only take probably 30, 34 players. They won't take more than that, more than likely for 3 games. The composition of that 34 is going to be interesting to see just who goes and who gets a rest. Will somebody like Vili Leroux, for instance, tour? Will they take him along? Will they rather stick with, will somebody like Kieran Horn come back into the mix? Is it more to blood players? Because they're going to be 3 tough tests up north, Scotland, Wales, and England. Not in that order, Scotland, England, Wales. But there's going to be 3 tough tests for the box.
Yeah, and Rassi's already spoken about the box have lost 2 tests this year. If they can go through the entire season with that number remaining the same, they would see that it will view it as a really successful year. If you look at those numbers and you add the fact that they've been blooding talent, 49 players, so far in total used this year, when you factor all those things in, then it is a very successful year. I'm just wondering, outside of the 49 used already, whether there are other players, in particular when you look with a view to the end of year tour, that might still sneak in. You mentioned 34, a squad of 34. That's going to make it very difficult for somebody on the outside to get a look in, unless, of course, there are injuries. And as you rightly pointed out earlier, Ruan Urquia, the recipient of he made the best of circumstances by coming to that side and playing 5 years in a row.
And I think there should always be a place for that type of player, and hopefully there always is. But you're right. There's, if you look at that, a player like Cameron Honeycomb, for instance, part of the problem that the Box have at the moment, I think people outside them is also the situation that makes it so difficult, is that these new players, you talk about Sasha, he's got 7 tests under his belt. By the time you get to 2027, you want him to have 30, 40 tests under his belt. That's the ideal that coaches talk about. They talk about that sort of experience. There are only 35-odd tests, 34-odd tests left before the next World Cup. I might be out with one or two, but it's in the 30s. So if you're going to give a guy like him as much experience, then he needs to play as much as possible. And the same in every single one of the young players that they brought through this year. With that in mind, you take a player like Cameron Honeycomb, that if you take him, then who do you leave behind? You leave a Jasper, you leave a Quagga Smith, which I don't think the Box really want to do. Elric, Marco van Staden. And you look at all the players that got around them. It's very difficult for anybody not currently in that squad to make it into that squad right now. And they're going to have to keep on knocking, and I'm sure one or two of them will, but that's the problem you have. It doesn't help giving all these guys new caps, and then you get to the World Cup and everybody's on 15, 20 caps.
Yeah, I suppose it comes down to what takes priority. If you asked me at the start of the season whether the end of year tour would be such a big priority, where it's win everything at all costs, or will there be an accent on developing your squad and bringing the youngsters in and, broadening your base, I would have thought that would be the focus. That might still be the case, but I think there's also determination not to give anything away at this stage or give anything away cheaply. So a player like Quagga, for instance, for me, is almost has to be on your team sheet first when it comes to touring, because he's just such a valuable player and can be deployed in different positions. Well, you're right. It will be very difficult, but it would be great to see a player like Cameron Honeycomb play at international level and in sort of a higher company, if I can put it that way, because there's something special.
No, exactly. And there's a couple of other players that from that mold. But I mean, even if you look within the squad, the Box sort of almost select their front row first. And while they're bringing a player like Karel Steenkamp through, you're going to say to yourself, when does he get to start the test? Maybe against Wales, but Oxenchair is probably in the mode where he, in my book at least, would probably be one of the 5 players for World Player of the Year the way he's played this year. And in that case, those type of players, those X-factor players that really turn the game, you want them in your starting lineup. So that's the difficulty that they have. Sometimes I feel it feels easier to make that decision for us than it does for the coaches. But our jobs aren't on the line when they lose. So, they want to carry on. And Sia said it on Saturday night after the test as well. He said, we want to keep on winning. We want to, And you get this feeling that there's really still quite a big desire there to create something special, to be that team that sort of dominates between World Cups.
Mm. No doubt. I mean, they relinquished the number one spot in the world. They didn't seem too fussed about it before the Nelspruit game, because as Sia rightly pointed out, he said the winning the trophy for them was far more important. But, while the going is good, I suppose, while the going is good there, you would have to have the sort of killer instinct to keep going and push it as far as you can. Stack up the numbers I know they will say that it's not about the numbers, but I mean, it is a nice feeling when you're out to the field knowing that you've got this body of work behind you, the momentum that's created, the confidence that's instilled in the side. Those are benefits that you don't have in every test. And so when the going is good, you better milk it.
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, another question. I mean, there's you can go through this almost every position. Willy Larue has got 96 test caps now. They talked about
97, getting, I think.
Is it 97? Okay, I stand corrected. Anyway, but he's a couple away from, just more than a couple away from his 100th test. That's obviously a big thing for him. Yeah, and as I mentioned, do you give Apelele Fassi more tests? Because he certainly deserves more chances in the Springbok jersey. You bring a youngster like Kieran Horn through. Or Damon Willems is going to be back at the end of the year too, probably as well. He started playing for the Stormers this past weekend. So that's the conundrum. Willy knows he's taking almost like a backseat role where he's there to help develop players. But obviously, there's also that desire to get to 100. and how they manage that's going to be interesting. And that's just one of the decisions that they have to make ahead of this tour.
Yeah, I mean, Rassie did make the point a few weeks ago already that they will, I think the words he used, will try and get Willie to 100. So, I mean, I think there is the general acceptance. He's not going to be playing all the time and he's going to get opportunity here and there. I would like to see the younger guys go on this tour. I mean, Damien Willems obviously has missed out this season. So he, if he performs well enough, he'll get back into that team for the end of year tour. And let a guy like Willy, you know, nudge towards the 100 and can get to it in South Africa in front of, adoring fans at home next season. So, yeah, that will probably make it more special for him. I don't want to talk out of turn here, but and for me, that seems the more logical choice.
Yeah, the other thing is as well, I mean, you look at all these youngsters that are going in. We're getting into a situation, and this Bok team is one that solves problems. Where this past week, we saw we had I suppose on social media, kicking problem with Marnie, and the Bok solved it by using Jaden. They still left points on the park, but in the context of the game, it didn't really matter much. But yeah, if somebody like Damien Willems, who's also been somebody who has flourished when he hasn't had kicking duties on him, he is the type of player that if he misses that first kick, then his head drops a bit, and you don't get the same sort of magic out of Damien Willems. So, and he's been allowed to flourish without the kicking duties. Now, if Marnie, with Sasha out, Marnie's performance became a lot more important in the context of the next tour as well, because he's going to be playing a part in that as well. And then I would probably think somebody like Jordan Hendricks is probably the next guy to come in. He did play in the first test against Wales. You would think that's the continuity. A guy like Siya Masuku probably is going to miss out at this point unless there's injuries. In that context, then you've got Marnie and, say, Damien Willems are both players who don't like to kick. So we're going to get to a point now where, if this carries on, you're going to have all sorts of other solutions. I'm not saying the Bok can't do it, but it's going to be the type of thing where Jordan or Cheslin or somebody or Faf, when he comes back, he's going to have to kick as well. And that's not a bad problem to have. It's going to be very different for Bok fans to accept. But you've got to weigh up the magic that Marnie brought on Saturday and whether it works in the overseas conditions in the Northern Hemisphere against that kicker. I mean, of course, we've got Andre Pollard. We mustn't forget he's also there. He could anytime.
Yeah, I was about to say. Yeah, it could also mean that he sees a bit more game time at 12. I mean, that could be one solution, but not necessarily at the start of the game. So there are options. I mean, you don't want to create too much uncertainty around goal kicking either. I think bringing in a guy like Jordan Hendricks does address the problem to a large degree, because he can, as we showed last week, he can kick them from a mile in any conditions. So on an end of year tour, that might be useful as well. And also, as Rassi rightly pointed out, although they've played a really attacking brand of rugby in the rugby championship, the conditions in the Northern Hemisphere may dictate that they play a little bit tighter. So the use of the boot is going to be important. Kick for goal probably more than you try and set up, maul tries might be a situation that comes up from time to time. But I think a guy like Jordan Hendricks in that side will address that problem, is no doubt. Of course, he won't. I doubt he'll play every test. But the point is that they'll move towards creating, addressing the problem. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, well, he's a great guy to have on the bench because, I mean, he can cover more than one position as well. I mean, and that's the Bok have in their favour. Damien Willems, Marnie the Bok, they all have the same sort of attributes in that they can cover more. And it's just going to be interesting to see how you've selected match day 23 and get somebody like Jordan in, who falls out, who doesn't get the chance, who takes the goal kicking if Jordan's not there and Andre's in another role. Yeah, those are all things. I think it could be quite a difficult squad to pick every week. And it depends what the Bok aims are and how confident they are. They can feel by experimenting a bit more than they normally would.
Yeah, that certainly does give them that license. I mean, they're on a good trot now, and whatever changes they make, it happens in an environment where there is already a lot of confidence. So whatever changes are made, if a young player comes in now, he comes into an environment that's fairly settled, and there's a lot of confidence. So that bodes well for them. What does not bode well is the behavior of fans after matches,
Ben. Yeah.
If you stuck around in the Umbumbela Stadium last weekend, because there was another little pitch invasion, similar to what we saw a few years ago. And scenes were a little unedifying, if you ask me.
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, we've all been to games, and this is not just a rugby problem. This is any major international sport, professional sport has problem of fans obviously on a high. Their team's won. Yeah, they're in good moods, they're good spirits, they're egged on by
They're
their mates.
high-spirited, you mean? That's what you meant to
Yeah,
say.
it's often fueled by other beverages. Yeah, so it becomes like a dare, and then they run onto the field, and then one guy sees the other guy. There's something you got two. I'd say we saw
Fueled
probably a
by
dozen.
cardinals and captains and the like.
Yeah, and I think the problem with that is, especially when you looked at Saturday, I mean, I noticed that later when the one fan was tackled and was out in the field. But part of the problem is that rugby has all these pyrotechnics that they, especially at Springbok games, they like shooting off, fireworks and things like that. And just behind the stage where the guys were going to get the trophy, there was two large bowls of, I'm sure, the sort of fire or pyrotechnics that were set up. And these fans were sort of aiming for this. And you could see the poor guys who obviously had to set this up, trying to keep them away. Then you had the two tiers of, you had the normal security guards, the guys in the brightly colored uniforms, and you have some of them that are in suits, etc. But they're not very effective at stopping guys, let's be honest. I mean, I don't think it's they're really that motivated.
But I got the impression there were a couple of younger guys who play a little bit of rugby who were also deployed, and they were deployed rather effectively.
Well, I sort of got wondered whether they're getting paid by how many tackles they made, because they looked
Yeah,
like they
yeah.
were local rugby players from a local club or
Yeah.
school or something like that. And they certainly went in, and that's where the one fan got tackled. Very good tackle, must have. There was one
Yeah.
distressing one I saw on social media, was the same guy who tackled the guy out, tip tackled a fan and slammed him into the ground. And that's the stuff you don't want. Sometimes, the adrenaline can catch the guys and they get a bit too eager. But that certainly wasn't the picture that we wanted to see. The fan going
Yeah.
cold on the ground, Springbok and the Argentinian medical staff suddenly being there, and then suddenly like 30 medical personnel around the guy.
Yeah.
From the reports I've seen, it looks like the guy's fine. But still, it's an easy way to have a horrible end to a great day out.
Yeah.
Nice piece of
The
rugby.
real disappointing thing I found was with that tackle, the one that you just mentioned, is that he didn't get up and go for the steal. He had enough time, show daylight, go over and win the penalty and hearts and minds.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's unfortunately, I don't know. I thought it was a terrible incident. And on a
Yeah.
serious note, people should realize that all over the world in football, and it's something somebody pointed out to me yesterday, so I'm going to mention it. All over the world in football, fans watch games behind huge fences. And in Argentina, there's moats between, in Brazil, there's moats between the football pitch and the stands. And that's precisely because of these type of things, because there have been incidences in other sports, and I know everyone is jovial on Saturday night, but there have been incidences where coaches have been attacked, players have been attacked, and it can turn ugly so quickly in a moment like that in various ways. So if you're one of the guys, if you're cheering them on, it's all good fun and laughs until somebody gets hurt. But next time, think twice. And that's Brendan being responsible now, saying these things. Public service
And
announcement.
well said. And well said. So, yeah, but if it continues, then maybe they should start thinking of putting a fence around Mbombela. But you don't really want that
No,
in that
exactly.
close proximity to the Kruger Park, do you? It just sends out the
No,
wrong message.
no. Well, yeah, and you're gonna ask where the wild animals are. But anyway, let's go straight into our interviews. Just bring you some quotes from Apalele Fassi, who's obviously been one of the standout players of the week, of the rugby championship, to be honest. And he spoke to us after the game, so we thought we'd bring you something, because we don't often hear from Apalele, and just on his thoughts about his return to the Springbok side. And just how it felt to obviously have such a great rugby championship. So listen, here's Apalele.
Yeah, I wouldn't say lost hope, but I would say maybe like having a glimpse in terms of mentality-wise, But I'll give credit to like the Sharks coaches in putting me into a great mental space. To be able to be backed by the coaches to play important games for the Springboks is an honor and a privilege. Yeah.
there was then asked about the fact that he was in the Springboks a couple of years ago, then lost his spot, and Damien Willemse obviously became the number one fullback. He was told to go work on some defensive frailties, and he spoke quite glowingly of his Sharks coaches who helped him through that and how he's returned. So Apalele 2.0 is a much more focused and a much more dangerous player for the Springboks. And he told how he went through that point and how he tried not to doubt himself the whole time.
Thank you very much for the saying I played well. But yeah, I think I would say I have improved. But obviously in sport, you can never say you're complete. So there's definitely work on and in all departments of my game. For me, it's all about just being able to play my best game, putting the Springbok flag high, and putting my family high. Yeah, when you have a dream and then you're told to go work on certain things, you kind of doubt yourself. I think the Sharks coaches, in that sense, helped me in saying that don't doubt yourself, saying that you can do what you can do. And you can do it. So just have confidence in that. So in the training grounds, just being able to train those things that I lack on, and then switching my mentality in terms of knowing that whatever you do, it doesn't need to be negative, even if it's negative, onto the next job.
Finally, we're going to hear a bit from Peter Steph Tatoe, probably the player of the tournament for the Springboks. Certainly the man that never seems to get tired, never seems to have this engine that falters. He's always the top tackler, the top carrier. He's everywhere on the stats every single time. Ex-World Player of the Year. And to be honest, he's just been so amazing. He's just been standard for Peter Steph, which is amazing for other players. So have a listen. The first question we was asked was, does he ever get tired? Does he ever need a break?
I got a bit of tired in the last match. This match on. Luckily, I got 2 weeks off, so the rest does wonders for me. So I'm very happy to be able to get some rest. And then going into another 8 years, feels comfortable when you have some rest before that.
The next two questions come from Liam, who posed these to Peter Steph after the game. Obviously, the first one just being about the emotion sitting back in South Africa and watching the team come so close, and then Marnie Lubbock missed that kick. How it felt and how much it influenced the determination in the side going in. But Peter Steph has been an exceptional player. We don't often hear from him, so it's always great to hear from him when he does speak. And hopefully his form continues into the future.
Peter Steph, can you talk to us about your emotions? You watched last week's game, and how that might have fueled performance.
Yeah, this was the final again. So our team talk before the match was, of course, the World Cup final is big. We've never won, as a team, we've never won since Russia took over a proper rugby championship. We won a third round one, but this was a proper rugby championship with six games. So for us, it was a proper final, and we focused a lot on that. And then, the emotions come into play, but emotions only last that long. So then it comes to execution and game planning for every individual to bring the X factor. And I think as a team, we did that tonight.
Give us that, when you assess your game, what are the things that you sort of prioritize when we sit playing? Your performance, what are the things that you look at?
Of course, we've got a saying, you stop momentum and you bring momentum. So if you can do that, that's the two basic stuff we focus on. So if we don't have the ball, we have to stop momentum, get the ball back as quick as possible. And when we have the ball, we need to get momentum and score a try as quick as possible. So if you can do that, but the main thing that I look myself after a game is if I can look myself in the mirror and ask myself, I empty the tank, if I make mistakes, as in our team, it doesn't really matter. As long as I give 100%, and that's it. If you have sit in the change room and think, oh, I could have done this, I could have done that, I could have run a bit harder, tackled a bit harder, then it's not what you want at the end of the day.
Liam, you had quite an interesting week and a couple of nights in Nelspruit. Is there anything about the local wildlife you could tell our listeners?
Nothing that jumps out, unless there's something I'm forgetting. I'm thinking, why are you leading me down this path?
Just throwing a line out there just to see if it gets a bite somewhere. But I had an interesting... We talk about the odd bit of tipple every now and again when we talk about this, but it was after you left the Jock that night. Place was packed. It was Friday night, the Jock Java, a lovely place in Nelspruit. Everyone was jovial, and we were trying to fight our way to the bar. And I got to the bar, and the barman who we met the night before, so he remembered me, I said to him, everyone at the table was drinking a brandy special. So I said, 4 brandy specials. And he said to me, why don't you just buy a bottle? And I was like, oh, why? Isn't that too much? And he said, no. It cost about, I think, 80 Rand more than the 4 brandy specials put together. And he said, then I'll give you 2 1-liter Cokes with it, etc. So I had this very bizarre thing of walking away, the first time it's ever happened in my life, walking away from a bar, back to my table, with a bucket of ice, 4 empty glasses, a bottle of brandy, and 2 1-liter Cokes, which was, that's never happened to me in any pub across the world. So Nelspruit is a bit different, and it was very interesting. But the hospitality of the people there, the vibe in that stadium was amazing. Every time we go to Nelspruit, that stadium is exceptional. It's electric, the atmosphere. Mm. And apart from those people who got a bit too excited and ran onto the pitch, yeah, it was certainly a good weekend out.
Yeah, I'm glad you made it to the game to absorb all of that. Well done on that front. I think we should maybe leave it there.
Probably good to leave it there. So we'll be back next week, and we'll chat to you then. We'll be talking a lot more UFC. There's not much UFC we could say this week because all the games were at the same time or around the spring game, so we didn't see much of them. So but next week, we'll be fully back into the swing of UFC. So that's our show. Have a great week. Keep watching rugby and enjoy the Springbok success like it is at the moment. I was going to say while it lasts, but that sounds terrible to say it that way. Enjoy the success.
That's true, but yeah.
What it is.
Don't say it. Cheers, hey, everyone.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening. For the latest insights and rugby analysis each week, plus new episode alerts, please follow or subscribe to the series. Or find all episodes at jacarandafm.com or the Jackpot app. That is world class!